interview with Thad Ure, E-U-R-E, December 12th, 1973, in Raleigh.
Start my 38th year. I go back right for a piece. Good long time. Yeah, I've been here with 11 governors in a row. 11 in a row. And I bet you 90% of the people in this state couldn't count off those 11 governors. So many of them been forgotten a long time ago. Passed away before they were born.
What major changes in North Carolina politics have you seen in, say, the last 25 years? Anything come to mind?
In politics?
Yeah. Well, politics as well as in the economy or in the state in general.
But especially in politics.
Well, the whole and overall style of campaigning for public office in this state is just as different today from what it was back in 48 as night is from day. Completely different. Back there in 1948, we were just moving out of a period when those interested in politics and wanted to incur favor with candidates, you only needed to go to see two or three people in a county. And then you could leave and go see two or three people in another county. And those people were well known, counties that you would visit. And if you were all right with them, you could leave and say, well, that county is safe in my bag. And that was just about the beginning of that change. Until we've gotten to the place now where if you want to make certain that you've got a county in your bag, you better not stop to see just one or two people that's found out that you did that and didn't see quite a number of other people. In fact, all you possibly could, you just simply played the devil. Because the people you didn't see get the idea. So-and-so would kingmaker and had been the kingmaker and we'll show him and they do just reverse of what they used to do. And back in those days the candidates would make a lot of visits and do radio was just getting started good. They'd make a whole lot of speeches over radio. And later graduated into TV and radio, different sort of organizational work. And back in those days, party candidates would always be together. They'd ride together. They'd speak together on things that were not controversial as far as the candidates are concerned. It was sort of a party organization. And we've gone from that until today. It looked like everybody's trying to be his own organization. So there's just as much difference in politics and campaigning today what it was back then. As I say, it's from night from day. Now, what sort of particular inquiries you want to make that.
Was that a gradual change, or was there one or two elections where there were a lot more changes than, say, in the years preceding?
It was a gradual change.
Right.
And it was a long time before it was completely eliminated in some of the areas of the state.
Are there any counties in which that still holds true that one or two people have already had?
Yeah, we got one or two counties that, today. We got one or two counties in the state that there's two or three people that you can see. Up until now, they've been able to carry things their way in those counties.
Is one of those counties in eastern North Carolina, I'm trying to think of the man's name, but somebody mentioned it to us before.
What's the sheriff in Rockingham?
Mm-hmm. Well, he's, no. No, the principal one that I was thinking about is Madison County, Western Part State. Now, you can see Sheriff Ponda up there in Madison County, Marshall. And see his brother Zeno Ponda, and see Liston Ramsey, who's a member of the General Assembly from that House District. And I'd gamble if those three fellows were together with the organization they have in that county. They could just about write the vote for the election. I think it's more so there than any other county in the state. I think that's generally recognized. But sometimes they lose. But when they do lose, they know why they lost, and that's fixed up mighty quick. How, I don't know, but they're pretty powerful. I'd say I could take a half a dozen people in Madison County and just about write the election result. Sitting on win and loss column.
But of the 100 counties, there are only two or three left where you can do this?
I think that's so.
What do you think caused that change? Was it television? Because you have the rise of personal candidate organizations, which must mean that the state party organization has decreased in its effectiveness and importance. What brought that about?
Well, I'll tell you my view about it. You see, without a registration showing the total number of Democrats and the total number of Republicans and the total number of independents, total number, no party affiliation, except for this switching from one to the other, you wouldn't have to have elections. All you have to do is just go to the registration books and edit the totals. Well, now, political campaigns are usually governed by those individuals who, because of their stature, because of their influence and so forth, they're able to have worthwhile followers, their intellect, their stature, their integrity, their character, and so forth. And they have followers. And then there's another group who try to buy their influence with money. They'll make contributions to campaign committees or to candidates. And they also will spend money otherwise. And you'll find that political subdivisions will be this way one time and this way another time. And that's because that those followers of the intellectuals and those people of stature, those people of integrity and character, they become disgusted at the results in government, and they rebel. And they rebel and go to the other side. It don't make any difference which side it is, because they want to get rid of it. And the same way with the followers of those who want to buy the influence with money and with contributions and so forth, when they're getting some of it. But when government hits them in a manner in which they don't like, then they rebel and they'll go to the other side. And so we've had a whole lot of that in this state, in different areas. I'm satisfied they have it everywhere. Where that people, they become more educated, they become more independent, and things haven't been going to suit them, following the leaders that they had so much confidence in. Their integrity, their ability, their know-how, and the manner in which they regarded their stature, willing to accept them as leaders. Things would go from bad to worse until they just rebelled. Now, generally speaking, that's what's happened in North Carolina. Some of the finest governmental administrators who were able to call the shots. For instance, I've seen the day when one man in the General Assembly would write the entire appropriation bill and would pass it in both branches of the General Assembly without an amendment being offered. That's an impossible sort of thing today. I remember back, of course this was prior to 1948, but I can remember back when two or three people would write all the tax laws in this state. And members of the General Assembly would follow. But that day is past. It's the independence that's been demonstrated by individuals. And then, two, we have had a growing psychology in North Carolina and everywhere else, I think. It's, as I see it, we've had a growing psychology here that money can do too much in government. Money, I'm not talking about where it's spent for the people, but the money angle. They look around and see leaders or officials of some of our biggest corporations. They could be tobacco companies, they could be some utilities in the state. And they sense it that they are supporting some candidate for this office or that office. As people will have a tendency to rebel. And we've got a lot of people who, that's the only thing they'd like to know, just find out who so-and-so is supporting, then they'll get another candidate.
Does that explain the 72 election of Helms and Holzhauser? The rebellion?
Yeah, it explains a whole lot of it. Of course, what I think about it, I think the Helms and Holzhauser election this day was just pure accident. Each one of them had to have as many Democrats in this state to vote for them as Republicans to vote for them. Had to have it. And there were a lot of reasons why they were against the candidate for president. They were against McGovern. They didn't want his like at all. And a lot of them voted for George Wallace because George Wallace said those things that people wanted to hear. A lot of them did that, would never do it again. A lot of folks that voted for George Wallace did so solely on the ground. They heard Wallace, saw him on TV, and and said, when I become President of the United States, if these lie-down strikers lie down in front of my automobile, it'd be the last time they'd ever lie down in front of one. And it was some silly thing like that, because it attracted their attention in the sort of way they felt themselves. Well, they're ready to go and shout and holler and walk in the ballot box and vote for George Wallace for no other reason except that. Well, that won't ever happen again. And the most of those that voted for George Wallace would have voted the Democratic ticket if it had somebody other than George McGovern. Then we've got a growing tendency in this state of people who say that they vote for the party rather than the man, which of course is always been an impossible thing to do. That's nothing but just chatter. Political parties have administered government in this state, in this country, throughout the years, and continue to do so. And you vote for a man because of his name is Jones, or his name is Nixon, whether he's a Democrat or whether he's a Republican. Whichever happened to win, no matter whether he's a Democrat or a Republican, then his political party is going to administer government. Now, the people that voted here for Holzhauser last November, they thought he was a nice fellow. He was getting along, doing the best he could. And here's a man who's running on a Democrat ticket, who they'd sized up as having spent $1 million and more to get elected. And there's so many of those people that didn't get a cent of it, you know. And they wanted to express their attitude towards such pictures as that, and went and voted for the man rather than their own party. And as soon as the man gets down here, why, every appointment he makes to the members of the cabinet and state government here, every one of them is a Republican except one. And he's a registered Democrat. And there's one other that has no party affiliation at all. Well, now, people that voted for Holzhauser weren't voting to oust all of those who were lifted out of their office and seek employment somewhere, get a job somewhere. They weren't voting to do that. They were voting for the man. And voting for the man, being successful, they finally wound up by voting for the Republican Party, and they got Republicans administering the government. I mean, it's just that simple. We're never going to see the day when a man is going to administer government. It's going to be his political party. And Holzhauser himself knows that. That's the reason he was so hell-bent in getting this fellow, who was a Republican chairman in this state, getting him out, because they sort of locked horns. And he couldn't get along very well as a man without having his party back in. And the chairman of his party and the government crossed up. And so this state saw one of the biggest battles we've seen in either political party over the election of a state chairman we've ever seen. And Holzhauser now has got his man as chairman of the party. And that speaks further in the light of whether men operate and administer government rather than parties, political parties. It's always has been, always will be, political parties administer government.
Well, you said the 72 election was an accident. Does that mean that in 76 you think the Democrats will?
In my mind, I don't think any question in the world about it. I don't think there's any question about it. I don't believe it, that we will see a 500,000 Democrats in North Carolina vote Republican team in 76. I have no idea that we will. Now, you see, we've got a registration in this state of more than 3-1 Democrats over Republicans. And with, whether it's right or wrong, with all of the dismissals in state government that the people have witnessed since this Republican administration been in power, and with all the backlash and conversations and people who've made up their minds as a result of the Watergate hearing, and as a result of income tax disclosures, and so forth and so on. I don't think there's any question in the world what 1976, it'll be just like a clock pendulum, go back just that far and follow. Because there won't be too big a gap in the result of November with all this change about facing that people did. The voted Republican ticket that never did before. Now let me give you this illustration. I remember mighty well that in 1929 I was a member of the General Assembly. Elected in November 1928. And that was the same time that Herbert Hoover carried this state. And in carrying this state, the Republicans won 49 seats in our General Assembly. And I was a member of that General Assembly. And the way that the times changed and the very next opportunity that the people had to go to the polls and elect a new General Assembly. How many Republicans do you think they elected to the 1931 the General Assembly, both House and Senate? 6. Well, now we've got 50 Republicans in our General Assembly. We've got 35 in the House. We've got 15 in the Senate. And that number was elected. That's one more than ever elected in this state, this century.
So you see it rolling back?
Oh, yes.
You think that will be reflected in 70, next year's election?
Oh, yes. They won't have any, the Republicans won't have 50 members of the two branches of our General Assembly. I have no idea they will. And there are many reasons for it. It's the program in the national government, the psychology of the people, the disgust that the people have for the type of government that they are experiencing. A lot of them are going to take their vengeance out on some of these ecology rules and regulations. And I'm satisfied that it'll be reflected in the next primary in the nomination of candidates and reflected more in the general election when they elect members of the General Assembly.
What kind of Democrat do you see getting elected in the primary?
What's that?
What kind of Democrat do you see winning in the primary next year, the legislature?
What kind of Democrat?
Right.
Well, I'd say, first of all, I'd see those that have been loyal to their party and didn't go off at one of these splinter parties or leave his own party when it was in its deepest trouble. You're going to see more Democratic Party loyalty in this state, in the next primary, and in the next General Assembly we've seen in a long time. I don't believe that we'll see candidates for office adopting their own program, their own platform, and running separately and independently like you did last time. I believe that the candidates will get together, they'll ride together, they'll campaign together. It'll be a team. And it was everything else but a team last time. And everybody knew. The only sort of team that we had in this state in the last general election was that every Republican and some Democrats even switched and got on the Republican Party and rode just as fast and just as hard and just as tight to Nixon's coattail as they could. If it hadn't been for that alone, Helms would have never been elected and Holzhauser would have never been elected. No.
Who do you see putting this team together?
Well, eventually, of course, Democratic headquarters are trying to do that now, but they can't do it. But those who are nominated in the primary and are successful, they themselves will put it together. Because they know that they can't survive.
Do you see somebody emerging as a leader from this group?
Well, I don't see any one individual. And I don't think we're going to have any one individual emerging. But I think that there will be a group of individuals who have been interested in the party heretofore and interested in it now, interested in the type of government they want to administer to the people of the state. Some of whom will be candidates for office, have never thought about being a candidate for office before. And then I think that after the nominations have been certified, then I think that you'll find that they'll be the ones who constitute the team to pull the party back together.
You see a new leadership emerging?
It will be. It will be.
You've had about as good a vantage point from the last 40 years of assessing government in North Carolina. And how do you assess Terry Sanford's administration and what effect did it and has it had in North Carolina? Because we still hear a lot about Sanford people, the Sanford wing of the party, and still hear a lot of references to his administration, which has ended almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, they're still alive. And it's got to be reckoned with. Now, Carl Scott, Governor Scott, he had an organization in this state that was awfully powerful. And of course, someone, when they pass out like that in a number of years, then new people come on the scene. That power and influence wastes away mighty fast. Bob Scott ran for governor just at the right time. But had not been for his daddy's powerful organization, Bob Scott could have never been elected governor of this state. Right, strange thing about that. Bob Scott is the only person serving as lieutenant governor that went from the lieutenant governor's office to the governor's office. And a large number of lieutenant governors have tried, but everyone failed but Bob Scott. Bob Scott would have failed except for his daddy. And dead and gone, but not dead and gone too long. That's it. Well, now, see, Terry Sanford is still living, and his group, they're keeping in touch with each other. Of course, it always gradually, you know, diminishes anybody that has power like that. It's like the most of the Scott forces, that's diminished down where it's rather thin wafer now. I don't know that Bob, his son, I don't know, but of course he had you folks added to it, and he still got the old and all, but Bob Scott's group in the state right now, with what he brought from his father's group, and that he cultivated his own, built his own, never did get to be as powerful as a group that Carl Scott's once was. Now, by the same token, Terry Sanford, he had an awfully powerful group, and it got to be more so when Kennedy was elected president. Terry Sanford got on that bandwagon. He was able to get a whole lot of people in this state in good jobs, positions of prominence in the state and in Washington, the Kennedy administration. But see, now as that passes along, all those folks who up by now, they back home. Some of them are trying to recoup. Henry Hall Wilson, for instance, he was right in the middle of the Terry Sanford organization. He'd never been on the president's staff in Washington as he'd been for Terry Sanford. There's a lot of people that Terry had around him that he was able to help in federal government. But time passes when Terry can't help anybody in federal government now with the Republican administration. Can't help. It's just like the old saying is in keeping somebody with you. Said, and I hear that one of your ardent supporters had left and gone with somebody else. I said, well, I can't believe that. He's been for me through the years as people before. Been state treasurer for a number of years. The credit of the state has reached its pinnacle. Everybody liked him, well known. And he ran for governor, and some of the leaders in this state discussed it several times right here in this office that Charlie Johnson was the only man that ever announced for governor of North Carolina could be elected and never get out of his chair. And a lot of folks believe that. And that sort of psychology permeated the state to such an extent that lo and behold, Carl Scott just beat the Lord out of him. People in this state just won't stand any such psychology as that. There's no way in the world you can beat Charlie Johnson, but you did. As Skipper Bowles, with all his money and his wife's money and his brother's money and the things he was doing and the polls he was taking and telling people what was going to happen, percentage-wise and otherwise. And rather than running a campaign through a Democratic headquarters, running his own campaign, separate and independent committee, people just didn't stand for it. This one had no notion of standing for it. But you're not going to have any politics away from people. People is politics. That's politics, people.
Now, only one lieutenant governor was able to run and win as governor. That was basically because of his father's popularity.
I have no idea. I think he would admit that himself. I think Bob Scott would admit that if it hadn't been for his father's popularity, these Scott roads, blacktop roads over the state in the hinterlands of North Carolina, if it hadn't been for that, I think he'll agree that he couldn't have made it.
What does that say for Jim Hines, 76?
I don't know. I don't know. Jim Hunt may be nominated by the widest majority anybody's been a candidate for governor of this state. I don't know. Well, I'm trying to tell you, it's people. People is politics. And you're not going to have one without the other. Yeah, Jim Hunt may, well, he wouldn't be breaking the record. Bob Scott broke the record. But we had Wilkins Halton, Lieutenant Governor, ran and missed it. We had Sandy Graham, who ran, missed it. We had Dick Fountain, who ran, missed it. And, I think there are others, but they just called, come to my attention right now.
What's been the effect of reapportionment in North Carolina?
Well, I don't know. I think the people in the states gotten over reapportionment. They were mighty mad. See, we got a little over one-fifth of the counties in this state that do not have a reservoir county sitting in either branch of our General Assembly. Now, that was mighty hard for them to take at one time, but I don't hear them complaining about that too much now. Got one county in the state with 10 members sitting in the two branches of the General Assembly, and 20-some counties without one resident sitting in either branch of the General Assembly. But I don't hear the people state complaining about that too much. I don't hear too much complaint by the people of this state now about this segregation that was such a burning issue. Not too many people complaining. And psychology can run just like fire in a room straw field.
What do you think are going to be the burning issues in the next 10 years or so in North Carolina? I mean, if you were...
One of the burning issues next time, next campaign, is to see that we don't have another Republican administration anytime soon in this state.
What's going to be the issues that... come to focus on
that? And well, what I just said is going to be the biggest issue.
What's going to be the argument against that in the Republican administration in the state?
Well, first of all, is that the Republican administration in Washington and further reorganization of state government in North Carolina. And You see, with all this change in voting, they didn't go to the registration booths and change their party affiliation. And you make some talk to some people who voted for Helms and who voted for Holzhauser last November. Some of those have had an opportunity. Even after the primary, when nobody was running to sue them in the primary. See, we had a low vote last time. I was a low vote. We should have voted over 1.5 million votes. And we fell several hundred thousand votes short of what we should have voted. What? Now, there were people there that just weren't going to vote for either one. They won't. But you're not going to find there was a 3-to-1 registration in this state. Yet with all that's happened in state government and federal government, you're not going to find 500,000 Democrats go and vote Republican ticket next time.
But hasn't the total number of people voting in the election decreased consistently since 1960? It wasn't 72 one of the lowest you ever had in this state?
No, no.
Why is that? Why is it decreasing rather than increasing?
Well, it's not one of the lowest of what I'm talking about.
Percentage. Going down.
The percentage of people 18 years of age and older who are eligible to register and vote was at 39% in 1972 in North Carolina.
Oh, when they reduced the voting age, we should have had at least a million and a quarter, three quarter votes in the state.
Okay.
But we didn't do it. That was a great surprise to the people of this state, the size of our vote when they lowered the voting age. frankly, it was a great surprise to me. But it's just like this. People, we've been in an economy, and people have been thinking about making money, going places, doing things, and not paying a damn bit of attention to government. I've seen today in my home county, it's a rural, small county, they didn't have but two courts a year, fall term and spring term. That when the judge of the Superior Court would arrive at the county seat, the whole court, why, it's just a big occasion to have a county fair today, and more so. And the judge would come in, they'd clear, they'd walk in front of the courthouse, and just like the President of the United States walking in. And now you could go to that rural county, they couldn't tell you when the courts are, or what judge is coming to hold the court. You can have courts anywhere in the world and state now, unless it's some spectacular case, the court might as well not have a courtroom for spectators. You have the judge and the jury and the witnesses and members of the bar who's interested in the case being tried. You can walk down the street, I bet you there's at least two Superior Courts sitting in Wake County right now. You walk from here to Serwalla Hotel, I bet you won't find, speak to everyone you see, I bet you won't find a half a dozen would tell you what judges are holding court here in this county today. What I'm trying to tell you is that people have gotten to the place where they have little confidence and a mighty little respect for law and constituted authority. I've seen the day when the superintendent of schools would go down to my rural county where I was born and raised in. And every school in the county would turn out and go to the courthouse or some school auditorium to hear the state superintendent of public instruction speak. And had a bigger crowd there then, with fewer people living there then than now, than you'd have the day if the governor or either of our United States senators would go down and make a speech. They're getting away from it. They're thinking about the taxes they have to pay. They think how little of that they see for what they have to pay. Thinking about how they're regulated. Now, right now, I wish I had some of the letters I'd received, and I've got nothing to do with it. People in this state write letters. Giving a new man out at the Motor Vehicle Department, Boyd Miller, the new Motor Vehicle Commission, filed a regulation in this office about carrying gasoline in drums on a motor vehicle. Just raising the devil. They've been regulated. They've been taxed. They feel like that public officials are not close to them. They don't care. In the General Assemblies, I've seen a day when this whole front floor, bottom floor, would be crowded with people and couldn't get upstairs there. See the General Assembly in session. Now it's very seldom you see the galleries down at the legislative building crowded. Maybe the state employees will get in there to hear the governor's budget message and occasions of that kind. They don't care anything about that. The vice president came here to speak. Agnew came here to speak. Why, you'd have thought the people from all over the state had been here, but just a regular day at the legislative building. They don't do that anymore. So now, the ways of politics are the same as the ways of people. The two go together. I don't know what sort of psychology will be prevailing when we have our next General Assembly. That is the one coming here on January the 16th. That's the same General Assembly. It's the same session. Just an adjourned or recess session. But that's one General Assembly that was divided itself so far as period for sitting. And nobody can tell you what their reaction is going to be after being back home. This very same individual here this year in 1973. And as so many of them, if it lasts very long, unless they change the date for the primary, they'll have to be announcing that candidacy and be campaigning for re-election before this crowd ever gets away from you once they convene in January. Well, don't you know, and don't I know, that depends altogether on what the psychology is back in the House districts and in the Senate districts as to whether they have a long session or a short session, and depends altogether on what the psychology is about these rules and regulations, what have you, as to how they will vote on different matters pending in the General Assembly before they adjourn. You can say what you want to. All these members of the General Assembly, they come here to enact laws, and in voting on those proposals of the General Assembly, most of them try to anticipate what the headline in the paper is going to be next morning that will affect them and their constituency. So politics and people, you can't separate them.
You worked with 10 Democratic governors, one Republican governor. Mm-hmm. He's been in office now for a year. Mm-hmm. Can you tell, is there any difference other than the patronage and so on? How do you assess Hull Susser so far as compared to the other 10?
Well, I don't know if he ever has a, talking about the Council of State.
Does the Council of State meet regularly?
Yeah. Didn't used to. That's a policy he's adopted. And now they meet on first Tuesday or second Tuesday, one or the other, in each month. Yeah, this is first Tuesday. First Tuesday, that's right, in each month. And then, of course, you meet any other time called session. Now, of course, if you've seen in the papers, there's a whole lot of division in policies and programs and so forth, in governor and lieutenant governor, one's Democrat, one's Republican. If there's been any meeting,